You're listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
Welcome to I'm a Doctor, Not a Podcast, Cinema Geekly Star Trek Podcast. It is the Chief Petty Officer, Anthony Lewis, along with the Fleet Admiral, Ben Knight. Ben?
Yes, yes.
Sir?
Yes.
How does it feel to be winding down service here? It's almost like we're kind of in a malaise of sorts. We're just sort of going through the motions, it feels like here, as our ship is about to be decommissioned and our show about to end its series.
Yeah.
This is
going to be sitting around pondering split infinitives. And yeah.
I feel like this is normally where Ben would have like a fun bit at the beginning of the show. And we were contemplating. Well,
I was toying with an idea about a special assignment for you to recalibrate the holodeck to recreate the events of The Trouble with Tribbles, but with a twist.
Oh.
I was going to make it a bit more exotic. And well, all I'll say is the original plan I had for this little bit was to suggest that the Tribbles should be wearing less fur.
Ooh, naked Tribbles.
Yeah.
That, we haven't done that yet.
No, we've not done that. And that, it turns out there might be a reason for that. It's
possible.
Weird.
You might not be able to show it on television, honestly. At least those are the rumors I've heard.
Mm-hmm,
that fur is covering up a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah. I was toying with the idea of splitting because we missed an episode where we would have been covering episodes four and five of Discovery. And the last time we did this, we were like, oh, well, we'll just do back-to-back episodes. And I'll be honest with you, I've watched episodes 4 through 7 and I had to double check to make sure that I wasn't in a bad mood when I was watching them, because sometimes as somebody with BPD, if I'm having a rough day and I watch something, my inability to regulate my emotions can sometimes inhibit how I feel, or sometimes transpose like how I'm feeling onto something that I watch. And I needed to make sure that I wasn't having a terrible day when I was watching these episodes, because I didn't care for any of them. And when it came time to do this episode of the podcast, I was like, you want to just do all of them? Like, just do all 4 of them? Like, and not even, like, in depth. Like, let's just kind of go over sort of kind of our thoughts on where the show is at, maybe. Here, as we're about to embark on the final 2 episodes of this show. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about episode 4, Face the Strange, episode 5, Mirrors, episode 6, Whistlespeak, and episode 7, Attica. So all of these episodes, I'm not even going to bother reading. There's 4 paragraphs here. And does anybody really have time for that? I don't know.
Anybody got time for that?
Look, anybody who knows me, probably Ben as well, but specifically me, because I think indefinitely more upbeat about the products that I consume. Usually my complaints are like, why don't you hate things more? Or why do you always like everything? This should come as sort of a warning to people. And as somebody who loves so much about Star Trek, and I will say this up front, I don't hate these episodes. I don't hate them at all. But as somebody who's seen a bunch of series finales in his life and quite a few Star Trek series finales as well, this just feels so empty to me. And I hate that. But I mean, this has been a problem with Discovery that we've talked about since sort of the beginning, is that this was a show hoping to find its identity. and it never really felt like it, at least to me, it never really felt like it found its identity. And I feel like I barely really know any of the people in this show. Like, a few of them we've talked about. Like, there are a few people atop the main cast that I feel like we've gotten to know a little bit. But that's sort of not the Star Trek-y vibe that I'm used to, where we sort of get a feel for everybody. There's so many characters throughout Voyager, DS9, or Next Gen that you get... you feel a familiarity with so many characters. And those shows have advantages that this one doesn't. Like, they ran for longer and had longer seasons and things like that. But I feel like, in the sense that this show has done so many season-long arcs, that it has sort of done damage to that sort of prospect of start, or that area of Star Trek, where you just don't have the time. You don't have, you only have 10, 11, 12 episodes, and you have to do this big overarching story every season, and you just don't have enough time to learn about some of the other characters and things like that. And and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't necessarily mean that I dislike the show or dislike what's going on, but this particular season is ending with... This doesn't feel like a series ending story arc to me.
No, and that, I think, is derived from the fact that what we've got to remember, and it may be the only thing that's allowing me to be charitable about how this season is panning out, is that when they were making this, they did not know that it was going to be the final season, and they didn't know it was going to be a truncated season either. So
I did not realize that.
No, so, okay. And that does have a massive impact on the pacing of it, on the choice of arc, on, I guess, to some extent, on the screen time of some of the characters and what have you. But, and you know, as we'll come to the introduction of a new first officer to Discovery as it, you know, as it ends. The problem with this arc, I'm going to say the problem with this season is the arc. So they took an idea from a Next Gen episode, as we discussed on the previous episode of this, and they wanted to spin it out for an entire season of basically a sort of, you know, treasure hunt. And it's, I think the first thing about that is that's a really tired trope in television, not just in sci-fi actually, but in all sorts of different genres. And the sort of, you know, who's edging ahead of who else is, again, a bit tired. The fact that you've got the, you know, these sort of rogue thieves, the sort of space Bonnie and Clyde thing, is, again, a bit of a tired trope. And oh, look, the female, one of them has massive daddy issues. Oh, gosh, that's never been done before.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you've got the interesting, or I suppose more interesting bits, like, you know, this evolution of the Breen on screen.
That has been interesting to actually get to learn a little bit about them. It's always been such a secretive species in Star Trek. They've only ever really had any sort of highlight on television in Deep Space Nine. But even then, they were very mysterious. Like, you didn't know really anything about them.
No, and the canon was slightly messed up over it, and has been arguably messed up further in the couple of these episodes. But I will say this, actually, like, they kind of get away with that because the whole point was they knew very little about the Breen. So there's, you know, there's probably misunderstandings in there and what have you. So
yeah.
I'm not too kind of upset about that. And visually, I know a lot of people dislike what they've done with the Breen. Actually, I don't hate it.
I don't hate it.
I think it's got slightly Star Wars aesthetic rather than Star Trek aesthetic, but whatever.
I'm just happy that when they keep to speaking the Breen language, it just sounds like what we've heard before.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
That was quite nice. They stuck to that vocal effect very well. Yeah. I mean, you get to see Breen unmasked, so... there is that. I mean, it's a little disappointing that Breen unmasked looked like that alien from the last J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie. That basically looked like that. But
there was a touch of that, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a generic look to them.
But episode four, I think, was very interesting for one reason, and that is that, so episode four, as you're trying to remember which one was which, that's Face of Strange, that's yes. with the time bug, and they're jumping around all over the place. So
yeah.
a couple of interesting things. Obviously, that's a weapon left over from the Temporal Wars, which we don't really know much about in Star Trek canon. We know about the Krennim, obviously, but
that was brought up was very interesting.
Yeah, and I've always thought they were a fascinating entity in Star Trek who, you know, probably deserved a little bit more explanation because obviously we got limited experience of the Krennim and the ones we met weren't the nicest.
No.
But Janeway sorted them out, it's fine. Yeah. But the thing about this episode I thought was interesting was that when we consider that this is season 5 of a show that has had at least 2 reboots, by which I mean, you know, sacking everyone in terms of writers and what have you, and completely changing the direction of it in every sense. When we hit season 5 of this and we have a retrospective, which is what episode 4 allows, I think it's interesting that you can see, like when you see Burnham now, as it were, modern day Burnham, and you see her against old Burnham, who I went back and actually watched some of the older episodes, and she really was that, like, kind of angry and aggressive and erratic and what have you. She's,
yeah,
like, there is a massive evolution in her character. The same is true of just about every other character that we meet in that flashback. The change in all of them and how they behave. And
it really has shown that there has been sort of a character arc for sure.
Definitely. And, you know, you had that, you know, the moment on the bridge where we have, oh, crikey, I've forgotten her name. Now dead cyborg.
Arium.
Yes. So having Arium back was like, it was a whole moment, first of all. And it turns out I did slightly care. Like, that whole scene seemed surprisingly powerful for a character who, I mean, I know we've had the actor back, she's been back in it since, minus the makeup, but
yeah,
to see that character return, to see how the bridge crew behaved then versus now, like, they didn't phone that flashback in, they really have looked carefully at how their characters have changed, and I found that genuinely interesting. But then every time I was kind of getting really into that, I was sort of sucked away from it by, frankly, by bits I didn't want to remember. Mm-hmm. Bits that I kind of think, oh, it'd be more fun if we'd been, you know, perhaps even stayed in the story, you know, the story about control and things like that. Was I kind of almost forgotten about that. And it was...
I had completely forgotten.
Yeah, but it looks better now than it did at the time. And I don't know whether that's... you know, and like Osira, she was quite a good big bad. She was a bit pantomime, but like she mm-hmm. was, that was a whole interesting thing. So all of these flashbacks were like, that was a value added element to that episode. But then, unfortunately, something that episode and episode 5 suffered with was this inexplicable to me insistence on shoehorning Book into every fucking other scene.
Yeah.
And what was really annoying is that like particularly episode 4 and I think episode 5 as well gave us, in fact no, definitely 4 not 5, episode 4 gave us like way more time of Burnham minus Book on screen than we've had for pretty much the whole season, and mm-hmm. I it just occurred to me, I like her so much more as a captain, as a character, without Book.
Without the love interest, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, she's just far more interesting without mm-hmm. Book on screen. And in fact, you know, to his credit, Book is more interesting on screen in, I think that might have been episode 5, when he's not in scenes with her.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still think there's no necessity at all for this convicted person on probation to then be, you know, present at important meetings. I'm fast forwarding to Erigo here. Important meetings with the Federation Council about the future of another prisoner. I mean, that makes yeah. absolutely no fucking sense whatsoever. I mean, even mm-hmm. the argument that, you know, she's family, which also feels utterly kind of shoehorned in there. I suppose that might be sort of locus standi for him to be there, but it also makes no sense. Why would he be there? The theme of discovery introducing ideas and characters that really do spark the imagination. The setting in the 32nd century is of itself something that is fascinating and sparks the imagination. But then to see so little of that explored, because the writers have this obsession with focusing on basically two characters, and then having the vehicle for this exploration be such a tired, hackneyed story arc, it just seems barking mad to me. I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. And the only way I can explain it, as I say, is by bearing in mind that they didn't know that this is how they were going to go out. For all of that, there are moments across these four episodes of almost delight, I would say. It was nice to see the ISS Enterprise and sort of see the changes in that as well. Have been interesting since we last saw it on screen quite some time ago.
Yes.
The Spock mention I found interesting given what we're all supposed to think about that. But anyway, there's loads of bits that appeared. I didn't particularly like much of the planet based stuff across these episodes, but it did at least feel vaguely traditional Trek. It wasn't wildly offensive, but it was just okay. And I suppose there is this question of, what do you expect? Every single episode, every attempt to make a Star Trek show cannot be DS9 or TNG or Voyager or whatever. See Enterprise for details. But even Enterprise at its weakest didn't feel as much of an effort as Discovery feels. And I think probably really the big truth about it and the reason why the successful Star Trek shows are ones that understand that you can have a contextual arc. DS9, for example, has a contextual arc of the Dominion War. You can have the contextual arc that crept into TNG, which was more about the crew, but it provided the sort of introduction of the idea, I suppose, of Federation politics a bit, and the sort of broader scientific nature of the Enterprise's mission and things like that. Voyager, of course, has the contextual arc of getting back to the Alpha Quadrant. You can do all of that and not have the show feel like they're just pissing you about all the way through. This I feel like shouting at the screen, get on with it. It's a bit like Picard, that everything except the last season of Picard had that problem with the pacing, that they were doing this long arc that you're kind of going, well, if you're going to do it, get on with it. Mm-hmm. Or at least give us more interesting stuff about what we are seeing. I mean, we've sort of culled the crew in Discovery. I mean, by the time you hit episode 7, Erigar, I don't know what's happened to our two helmsmen. We just lost them, turns out, because, Detmer, unless I'm mistaken, I think Detmer was flying the ISS Enterprise back to...
I don't even remember that.
Yeah. Well, it was a throwaway moment at the end of it. Now, I assume that's a deliberate thing to have two of them off the bridge there. Saru, of course, is missing, but I think there's an explanation for that, because... Doug was filming something else at the time. Can't remember what it was now. But we knew that he probably wasn't going to be in it so much because of the fact that the timings didn't work out because everything was rescheduled due to COVID. But even with all that in mind, we are seeing little moments of stuff that feels like it was overdue. So we're seeing a little bit more screen time for other characters. Not enough. I mean, Jet Reno's scenes are always bloody brilliant.
Of course.
Bit bored of Adira at this point for reasons discussed in the previous episode. Tilly, I've said it before, I'm not a raging Tilly fan like so many Discovery viewers are, although I do like her character. And I think her interaction with Raina kind of breathed a little bit more life back into that. That was fun to watch. You've also got Commander... what's his name?
See, Commander New Guy.
Commander New Guy, who isn't new. He's been there for bloody ages, and I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Wow, how bad is that?
Don't remember either.
Isn't that weird? Because that couldn't happen with any other Star Trek show. We'll come back to me in a minute.
No, it wouldn't even happen with Enterprise, honestly.
No, absolutely not. I mean, oddly enough, I just looked at the, you know, cast photograph of Enterprise. It's popped up at the top of an article I was reading. And I can
and you're like, oh, yeah, Travis Mayweather.
Yeah, I can name all the characters in it. Whereas if you did that with Discovery, I think I'd struggle with a few.
I would definitely struggle.
So the thing is, you know, you look at the layout now, and maybe it's a good time at episode 7 to sort of reflect a little bit of what's going on in Trek. And, okay, so this is being culled. I think it was always kind of doomed to fail ultimately, so I'm not sad to see the end of Discovery, to be honest with you. I think it's a missed opportunity, but there you go. Lower Decks, end of that, which I suppose, again, as much as I've enjoyed it, and it has been fantastic.
It's been pretty strong.
Good value. Yeah, it's been good value for money as well for Paramount. Easily the cheapest of the shows to make, I imagine. Yeah. But I guess if it carried on running and running and running, it would quite quickly turn into Family Guy in space, and we don't need that. And also, as a friend of mine was saying, yeah, all of the crew in it, none of them are breathtakingly incompetent, so there's only so long that they would be on the Lower Decks. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true, although my counter to that was that, well, yes, but you can always have the Next Generation. Give it a couple of years to have a break and then bring it back with Lower Decks, the Next Generation.
Yeah.
I would be here for that. That would work.
Yeah. And it's actually a really funny name, considering the time that that show takes place
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You've got Prodigy, which... again being cold, but yeah. I suspect that's going to upset people, because take or leave the first season of it, I still feel sorry for people who didn't get past the sort of third or fourth episode, because it really did
pick up. Yes,
yeah, and I think the second season of it, which is very nearly upon us actually, is going to be, I think it's going to be brilliant, truthfully. Mm-hmm. I think anyone who's a Voyager fan is going to absolutely live for it. But that's coming to an end. So what we're really now left with
is
Strange New Worlds, which, as long as they keep that episodic, I think can run for as long as they want it to run.
Yeah, it'll be fine. I think.
Yeah, that should be fine as long as they keep the writing tight. It's got a fantastic cast as well, which is a definite bonus.
Second season wasn't quite as good as the first, but
it wasn't. And
yeah,
but I think maybe some stuff around the problems, like the production problems, making it might have been part of that. I don't know, but that could carry on running. Then you've got the film, which we're pinning a lot of hopes on that.
We'll see how it goes.
And like, it could be brilliant, and really, like, the sandbox they're playing in, making a Section 31 movie is huge, because we know Section 31 are not against misuse of temporal jumping around the place. We know that basically they could borrow and dip into, and, you know, even be staffed by just about any period in Star Trek, any set of casts they want, because it doesn't matter about the age. They can drop in on them when they drop in on them. They could even borrow from Lower Decks, frankly. There's so much that they could do in that show, in that film. And I worry a little bit when I look at the casting information and so on, that it's all basically, everyone really loved Michelle Yeoh, let's make a film about her. Much as living for her being the driving force of that show, of that film, because like, her character is strong enough and she is a good enough actor to do that. I wonder if it might be at the expense of, you know, for example, Klingon Fandango, I don't think is attached to that film yet, which I find really surprising.
As far as I know, yeah.
Jerry Ryan, I don't think, is attached to it. Again, somebody who would be really interesting in it. There's loads of people who I hope we see in it, including I'd like to see some Discovery people in it, which, again, is not impossible given, as I say, the size of that sandbox. Mm-hmm. It's entirely feasible. And then that's it. We're into kind of empty space. I mean, there's talk about other films.
Legacy, obviously.
Well, Legacy's dead.
As far as we know.
I think it's dead. And it's not just they've gone silent on it. The official response from Kurtzman seems to be, we are not making that show, which is odd, because he was, you know, you've got people like Fatty Riker, still, even up until very recently on social media, basically saying, look, if you want Star Trek Legacy, then
be vocal about it.
Petition Paramount. You need to tell them.
I feel like people have been. I feel like people have been vocal about it, though. That's the thing.
Everyone has. Every time I see like a YouTube video, kind of doing what we do, and even up to and including ones that are vaguely attached to Paramount who have people on from the show, or whatever else. They all, even if it's a passing reference to, you know, Star Trek Legacy, the show we all hope we're going to get, like everyone is on the same page because, you know, it's a TV magic moment. The last shot of Picard where, you know, you see, well, not the last shot because obviously that's Q, isn't it? But the penultimate shot where you see Seven as a captain and you see a crew assembled around her on a bridge that looks pretty damn sexy, and you know,
on the Enterprise,
we've got a sort of broad, I suppose, antagonist in the background, and it doesn't really matter about John, you know, John's age, because it doesn't really matter, he's a Q, and also we've also got two other actors who are both available, it turns out, who could also return to a Q role, who've been a Q before. You know, we've got so
Corbin Burnson, of course, you're talking about.
Yeah, and there's so much there that just like that snapped into place.
He played a Q once.
He did play a Q once, yeah. There's so much that snapped into place in like 15 seconds of television that everybody, even the name, kind of spontaneously popped into everyone's brains somehow. Mm. It was being called Star Trek Legacy by the fan base. Like, everyone arrived at the conclusion that that would be its name just from watching, that 15 seconds. Yeah. So, I don't know. We're in a very precarious time, I think, for Trek. I think that the last three episodes of this show, Labyrinth, which at time of recording I've watched, just before I forget, Labyrinth contains obviously a fantastic little Easter egg to people who are fans of movies from the 80s. Labyrinth, the Frank Oz, Jim Henson, David Bowie film.
Mm-hmm.
That line in Labyrinth, I can't remember what it was. What was the line in it? There's a direct nod to it. Oh, about the prison. He says, well, more of an oubliette is a very clear Easter egg from the film Labyrinth, which I enjoyed. But how weird to break down that particular fourth wall in that episode, because it did feel a bit fourth wall-y, that.
It just now hits my synthahol-laden mind that we were actually not supposed to talk about
episode four.
We're supposed to talk about 5, 6, 7, and 8, and I have not even watched 8. So,
I'll ruin that for you.
That's okay, Ben. I didn't process any of that stuff. I was too busy.
Well, that's fine.
I was too busy trying to remember the thing that I wanted to talk about, which was in my mind how I was envisioning as I was sort of just pacing around.
Oh,
the other
yes.
day.
You said off air. Go on.
Yeah. A season. And look, this is. I'm not going to pretend like this is what they should have done, or this is what they should do, or this is what anybody should do. I was just thinking in my mind, and granted, it was a mind that was not in the best of places, so this is probably a little Route 1, but it can't be any more Route 1 than what they're doing right now, which is kind of more of like a modern Route 1, which is...
Go on, let's have your pitch.
Like, take an old series episode and then stretch it to like 10 episodes. And it hasn't been working, at least not for me. Like, I've struggled to get invested in this. And getting the insight that they did not realize this was going to be the final series until they're like, it's the final series, that changes things in a lot of ways. Like, I don't feel as harshly about it now, because what can you do? Like, this is what happened to Enterprise as well, when they found out season five was going to be the last season of that show too, and they kind of
just in case anyone's forgotten that Paramount is an absolutely evil production company.
Yeah, they just had to make the best of the situation that they could, and it turned out to not be so great, honestly. But what can you do? I'm sitting here thinking about something like what I would want to see is, and you can, and you can make this an arc if you wanted to, but the thing that I loved most about the how Next Gen ended, and granted, Next Gen got to cheat because they were going to be making movies. So you can make a very cheaty series finale for that show where you don't have to actually resolve anything, really, or it doesn't have to feel like an ending. And quite frankly, they didn't really end up doing that until season three of Picard, because they failed to do it in the movies. But, you know, I just wanted something where I got this sense of family, I got this sense of belonging, I got this sense of who the characters are and their ties to who they are as a crew and things like that. So in my mind, I was thinking of a season where you would get, in my mind, at best, like best option, a bridge crew member, like somebody on the bridge that we know, but we're not very familiar with. And I'd take your pick on who that would be. But they would be the villain for the season. And like and at worst, it could be somebody who's just on the crew that traveled into the future. So at worst, it could be some no-named crew person. But at best, I feel like it would work better if it was somebody that we kind of know who they are, but we didn't really get to know very much about them, that sort of thing. And they've spent quite a few years now in the future, but like one of these people sort of becomes disenchanted or they become disaffected by where they're living and they start, I don't know, going crazy is the right answer, because I don't think going crazy is the right word, but they start thinking like, is everyone else crazy? Like, do you not forget about like, you know, did you forget about like what we left behind? Like I have a family, I have children, or I have, you know, whatever it is. And you're like, we're not even thinking of like, they become obsessed with going back to like, we don't belong here. We don't, this is not our time. Like everyone is just pretending like we're just fitting in. Like, and honestly, in some ways it's kind of a weird meta analysis of the show because when they got to the future, it sort of just felt like everyone was just cool with it. And that felt very weird to me.
Well, somebody said on Reddit, although I think it was ever so slightly racist, but the point was perhaps fair, which was you needed a character, and the example they gave was Lieutenant Commander Reese. There you go, names popped back into my brain. Who they described as the Harry Kim of Discovery, which I thought was them being racist. But what they meant was that his character, if he were to be the Harry Kim of Discovery, would be the one constantly going on about going home. Exactly. Yeah.
And like the season would follow them on this quest to obtain technology or whatever, in an attempt to return in their minds, like everybody to go back to the place where they belong, to go back to the people that they belong to, all of that stuff. And it would make sense to me because number one, you would get character and you, and I feel like when you make it, when you make the villain a member of the crew, you're you're then forced to look at all of the relationships that this person has with
the
crew.
We have had some of that. I mean, Voyager did quite well with that. Yes. Next Gen obviously famously had one particular character. So,
and I feel like that's where maybe some of that is coming from, because I feel like that stuff works, and Discovery, the crew of Discovery is a crew of people that we don't, we know the main players, but we don't know the people that are just below that level very well. And I feel like a story like that sort of forces those things into the light. Like you're forced to be like, let's learn more about Detmer. Let's learn more about Linus. Oh, well, let's and, learn more about, you know, whom any of these people that these people would have interactions with. And you can understand a villain's motives by wanting to go back to where they're from. Because who wouldn't? Who wouldn't want to be reunited with the people that you loved? Like, the more you think about it, the more you realize those people are gone, and so are their descendants, and so are the descendants of their descendants, and all of that stuff. And I could see how it could drive you a little mad. And
maybe that's what Nilsson and and Detmer and Oa are all doing. That's why they've all vanished.
They're all trying to like, wait, how this future thing is not working out for us. And at the end of the day, I feel like you could probably do a story about like family and loss and learning to grieve and mourn, but also try to move on from the, you know, these are the cards that we have been dealt. And those, I feel like this shouldn't be a series finale story for the show. I feel like this should have been like season three of the show, should have been about dealing with this sort of loss. But instead, the show is just like, well, we're in the future now. Let's,
well, yeah, we're just, I mean, in the future five, now. Season five literally starts with basically everyone going, What happened? No, this is... Hello, we're just here now. This is the Federation doing what it does and Starfleet doing what it does.
I mean, this is... It's not a good save. I feel like there's so many missed opportunities. You talked about going into the future, and it feels like the show is barely tapped in to what it's like to be in this future at all. Like, you know,
even
about...
Even on the technological point of view, okay, so we've got programmable matter. We've got the sort of detached nacelles.
Yeah.
And we've got some cool tricorder contact lenses very recently.
Yeah, the instantaneous transporting, and, like, all of that stuff.
Yeah, but that's all we've got. And we've jumped to the 32nd century.
We have, like, no idea what... It almost feels like... Nothing. In some ways, it feels like nothing has changed.
Yeah, and, I mean, some of that, obviously, people go, oh, well, the burn and the various wars. Yeah, sure. But then also, wars tend to drive innovation for a start. So if there's been wars, they'll have been into innovation.
And not just technologically, but also like sociologically. Like there just doesn't feel like there's been a lot of change. And, you know, for a show that was called Discovery, it feels like there hasn't been a lot of discovering.
That's the problem,
isn't
it?
In the show. Yeah. And I feel like that name sort of brought with it some sort of promise of like, you know, we're going to learn so many new things about the universe and as a result, ourselves, because that's what Star Trek is, what it does. But in a lot of ways, it feels like it's just sort of rehashing old things. And I get that it can be tough because there's so much Star Trek and there's so many episodes. And how do you not rehash old ideas after a time? But it just feels like they... You know, one of my wishes.
What you don't do is pick an old idea, and in fact, an old story and idea that I mean, it was an old trope even when Next Gen did it, which is why they only wasted an episode on it. And also, weird idea for an episode, as we covered before. But but like, what you don't do is piss away an entire season on something that
I still love my original idea for this show way back when it was announced that it was happening. Which was put it in the future, like where it is now.
Yeah.
But also put it in, because all of Star Trek takes place within the Milky Way galaxy. I'm like, make Discovery the first ship to explore the Andromeda galaxy. The first ship in a brand new galaxy.
Like, and in the comic books, we've now got a warp core as of this week in the comic books that would have been capable of doing that.
See?
It's been done.
Anyway, Ben, I don't have a lot of positive.
Well, like I said before, the storylines from Star Trek Online have been often more interesting. Even the arc storylines in there. We're just about to get the return of Sela as well, although seemingly, I've not actually looked too far into it, but seemingly as a Federation captain.
Yeah.
So something
odd has gone on.
Maybe Mirror Universe. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. We'll see.
Well, anyway, I'm going to go catch up on episode 8. So this way I can actually
go
be
and,
up
go
to
and
date.
Enjoy looking at the Toronto University Library.
I will. And then we're going to come back in a fortnight to talk about the final two episodes of this show. And we'll see what happens. We will see what happens. But for right now,
I'm
not
for good
feeling
things.
Good. I am too. Of course, I'm hoping for good things.
Fatty Riker wrote the next one, as in penultimate one, Lagrange Point, and it's the sort of...
Olatunde wrote the final episode, the showrunner.
Yeah, and it's Michelle Paradise who's...
who's great, really good.
She's in charge of things for that as well. So, yeah, it's got potential. I don't know. One thing I do hope is that, and it's going to be difficult because, of course, when Discovery's set, but I do rather hope that this cast, because some of them are brilliant, and I think it would be such a shame for this to sort of be the end of it. And I know that there'll be Discovery books and extended media and so on, but you know, seeing as we're doing an awful lot of jumping around in time and space these days in Trek, to the point where it's almost sort of started to confuse itself with Doctor Who, I think. I think it would be nice if occasionally, not all the time, but just occasionally, we had an opportunity to see one or two of those characters again. Mm-hmm. It feels just rather sad that we're losing them.
Yeah. Okay, everybody. Well, that is the podcast for now. We're not giving scores for all of these episodes. This was just a time for Ben and I to sort of vent about our frustration. And again, this is not to say that we feel like these are terrible episodes. Like, they're way worse episodes of Star Trek. It's just...
Episode 8's not bad. Yeah. I don't hate episode 8.
Yeah. It's just been a struggle of being like, eh, okay, next episode. Okay. Next episode. Like, I don't feel the sense of excitement like with Picard season 3. I mean, and obviously they were playing off of nostalgia there too, and they're playing off of it a little bit here.
But it had a decent storyline, and we were kind of holding on to find what happened next. Which, if you're going to have an arc, you've got to care about what happens next in the arc, you know?
Yeah. And this has been, like, you know, not that exciting. Anyway, everybody, head on over to cinemageekly.com where you can check out the archives of the show. And, of course, you can, this is a listener-supported podcast, although after listening to this and you like Star Trek, you'll be like, I don't want to support these guys. They're so mean. But
I don't know. I think a lot of people probably feel the same.
If you feel the same, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/cinemageekly. We have the merchandise store. Ben, do you have the com button to press for that?
This one here.
Geeklymerch.com.
That's the one. Links for those are in the show notes for this episode. And of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and Pocket Casts. Anyway, you can find it. I almost just said podcasts. Find us where you find them.
Find us on Elcars.
Find us on Elcars, of course. Find us at your local holodeck or holosuite, whatever you'd like to call it, depending on which part of which quadrant you were in, I guess. just search for I'm a Doctor, Not a Podcast, and subscribe, and that way you can join us next time where we will talk about Star Trek Discovery Season 5, the final two episodes, Episode 9, LaGrange Point, and Episode 10, Life Itself.